Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. Very serious, very professional. Everyone better take me seriously. Your host, Christopher Hart. We are now 2 weeks past the social, right? This will air Friday. You're going to knock it out, Jack, before Friday? Sweet. It was a fun conversation with two people. So let me back up a little bit. So about a year and a half ago, there was a group that was formed called the Houston Bourbon Consortium. It was a three restaurant owner group of world famous Chris Shepherd, chef from Underbelly Hospitality, Morgan Weber from Agricole Hospitality, and of course, Kevin Floyd. Kevin Floyd recently left that group and got out of the hospitality industry, and now it is no one really knew the details behind it publicly. Plenty of things have been said behind the camera, but they would make these trips to Kentucky every year where they'd pick out barrels. Really hard to get barrels too. Old Weller Antique, Buffalo Trace, Willett, the stuff that no one else could get in Texas, especially me. This last trip that happened in March, Kevin didn't go, and the Houston Bourbon Consortium was then named the Kentucky Tejas Club. And people were kind of wanting to know the backstory behind it. So I ran into Morgan at an event a couple weeks ago, and I said, hey, buddy, why don't you come on, tell us the story of what happened. And, of course, we had to sit down with Chris Shepherd. So today we have Chris Shepherd and Morgan Weber. We kind of sit down and talk about their history in this industry, the whiskey. Chris has an incredible collection himself that he's been collecting over the past few years. And we find out what happened to the Kentucky Tejas Club and why it's no longer the Houston Bourbon Consortium. This isn't some drama-filled episode. We just basically get the story behind it, why they changed names, and, of course, what's coming down the pipeline. What are these guys working on? Chris is a part of something called Southern Smoke, which is this fantastic, massive event that features barbecue and raises a shit ton of money for charity. You may want to write that down. And these guys just have these – they're friends. They've got this intertwined life where they've done a lot together, and it's an honor for me to sit down and talk to them both. So, and we do it over vintage whiskey, right? So we sit down with this 89 Old Taylor. We visit a 1969 Dant. And of course, no vintage tasting would be sufficient without a nice 70s Wild Turkey. So fantastic discussion with these guys. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Let me remind you guys, we could rate and review us on iTunes. Every show airs Friday on iTunes and all podcast platforms, and with the Facebook version or the radio version being posted the next day on 97.5 FM ESPN in Houston. I think that covers all of our bases. Rate and review us, and cheers. Morgan, our third time.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
Chris,
thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me.
I wanted to have you on for a while, but I only just asked, so I don't know why I waited so long to ask.
I guess if you would have asked before, I probably would have been here before. Well, that's how that works.
I've been wanting you
on the show forever now.
I've said that many times.
If you don't ask, the answer is always no.
That's correct, yeah. So finally, I got a little warmed up at Tastemakers, and I saw Morgan, and we had a brief discussion, and I saw you running around because you seemed so busy during that whole thing. And I was like, oh, you know what? Now's the time to ask. And he was like, well, this is his PR person, right? She just happened to be standing right next to you.
Lindsay was standing there.
So I was like, okay, all right, well, let's do this.
Yeah. Came together.
Because you, the first time, and I know this is going to sound, where the hell have I been? I wasn't really in the food scene before. The first thing I really saw on you that led me know that you were – And the whiskey was an article about it. There was an article that was done with you, I think in the Houston Chronicle or something, about your whiskey collection.
Yeah.
Probably. About 3 years ago.
Probably, yeah.
And you're a whiskey drinker.
I am. Yeah, definitely.
Some might call him a whiskey hoarder.
Yeah, some might call me that. Started about 5 years ago. I mean, that's all been 5 years of collecting.
Yeah.
And it's happened a lot. Really fast.
It's one of those hobbies that does that to you, though.
Yeah, and it was basically just Lindsay saying, hey, let's put a little small bar together for when, you know, people come over. And then it turned into, well, if you want a gin and something, you're going to have to dig behind all of that.
Sure.
And if you want something other than bourbon, you're going to have to dig behind the bourbon to get to that.
So sure.
There's a very small selection of other stuff that's not of this varietal.
I still have the same bottle of Sky Blue vodka that's been sitting in our freezer for like, I'm not even kidding, 10 years. We never drink vodka when I have the option. It's not, I mean, if I'm not in a whiskey mood, there's some fantastic rums or some great brandies from our friend Joe, Joe Heron from Copper and Kings. I end up finding a reason to never make it to that far down on the list to get vodka in my glass.
Well, if I'm at home, I'm going to have a bourbon.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that when people come over, I'm like, you guys want something to drink? And they just look at this wall and they're like, it becomes mesmerizing.
Sure.
Yeah. At some point. And so that's always just where it tends to go.
Oh, and it's just kind of bred upon itself. Last time I was at your house was for that charity dinner.
Yeah.
Hadn't been there in about a year. And like, he's got a back wall. It's probably not too dissimilar from this back wall with shelves on it. And it was full of bourbon the last time I was there. Or when I was there a year ago. Last time I was there, maybe 2 months ago, it had kind of bred and... And it's now spilling over into the living room and then into the hallway.
Yeah, it's kind of everywhere.
The kitchen.
Well, because when we buy barrels, I buy a case of everything.
Sure.
You know, and that's been the thing. It's like buying whiskey off the market now is you know, it can be entertaining. But like if you can find something that's really special, that's where you should go.
Yeah.
Well, and that's actually, it leads me to my next point, and feel free, we can cut this out if you don't want to answer it. But you've got this pretty incredible, decent collection of old vintage stuff, like stuff that the only place I know where to get it, I know two places to get it, is overseas auctions or mm-hmm. Facebook Black Market, right?
Yeah.
But you're not really a social media guy, and meaning I don't see you on the boards unless you're doing all this under some fake account, but meaning where do you get your – where do you – for in 5 years for you to accrue this massive collection, where do you find your outlet to accrue these
overseas
things?
Accounts, overseas auctions and things like that. Yeah. You know, and for the most part, I've had pretty good luck with it. You know, the Facebook stuff, I don't – we talked about this when we were in Louisville last time. Is like the Facebook thing that is a page – and so I can't see other things.
Right. It's not – yeah, I'm familiar.
It's a business thing. Yeah, whatever.
He's got so many friends.
I don't, but technically. Whatever. it became a business, right?
Sure.
And so we've talked about me doing a fake Facebook thing or whatever, but that or a separate one or whatever. I don't really understand it.
Sure.
And that's probably not a good thing for me to do. I should probably just stick to what I know.
Right.
And so, yeah, I just do it in overseas markets.
When you say it's not going to be a good thing to do, I would say probably not to your wallet.
Yeah.
Because there's
yeah.
so many incredible – and you get in the right groups. And I know a few people who can't afford to be seen, you know, because they either work in the industry or something. And so they'll use a fake burner account. But they'll let the admins know who they really are so that there's never any, you know, there's always the accountability, yeah. they'll, you know. And, I mean, just in the last few years alone, it's incredible how your collection grows. I mean, my collection always fluctuates right before the event because we're buying for the event and other stuff, right? So this was all bought just before the event.
Gotcha.
How many bottles are you sitting on? I feel like
– old stuff or just total?
Just in general. Like what are you – at your house, what's the Chris Shepherd collection look like?
I have no idea.
Man, if I was going to throw a number on it, probably 500.
Maybe, yeah.
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 400 or 500 bottles.
And there's a ton of people I know of in Houston that are sitting on that kind of product. And
that's crazy, isn't it?
And I mean, when I say a ton, I mean several hundred people that I know of that – and it's weird that there's this whole underlying thing and no one's really talking about it other than
yeah.
on this little show.
Do you feel like that's you know, particularly unusual for Houston or
I do.
Or America.
Yeah,
do you think Houston has like this nucleus of collectors?
You and I both know of some places that, let me find a better way to word that. I'll take a little bit of that as well. I think it's very unique to Houston, and I know that based off my experiences with dealing other markets and bringing in like when we want to bring like we got NB Roland distribution for the full state because we wanted just private barrels of it. We worked with distributors.
God, what a like treat for the distributor for the distillery to like have somebody help run
help bring them into market. Yeah,
on that man.
Well,
that's the biggest pain for distilleries.
Is at least trying small to get, ones. Oh, dude, yeah. Have you, yeah.
And navigating new state liquor laws. God, that's a beating.
I'm not going to say who, but we all know of certain liquor store buyers that some of those meetings are absolute hell just trying to get new products into their into their stores.
We know what you're talking about.
But the
I have no idea, so that's good. I don't.
That old turkey is so good.
I think it's very unique to Houston is my whole point. I think Houston is there's been a movement here for a long – it's like our food scene here is ridiculous.
Yeah.
There are great food scenes in other cities, but it's not quite like Houston. And it's not me trying to brag on a Facebook group. It's me trying to brag on the city. I know many people who aren't in Facebook groups that have these incredible collections. Yeah, yeah. And it's just kind of surprising that once you kind of get into this hobby, you all of a sudden meet people that have – been doing this for so long, and there's a huge. I mean, the GCBM meeting you were invited to. Most of those guys don't like Facebook.
Yeah,
and that group, the Gulf Coast Bourbon Maniacs. There's a group of I call them old dogs. They've been doing this for
before it was cool.
They've been doing it in Houston for 11 years, and these are all older guys with lots of liquid income and incredible collections. And there's no Facebook group for it. Mm-hmm. They just have been getting together once a year for a bottle share, and everyone brings stuff like this and this. And you know, Randy Blank. Do you know who Randy Blank is?
I really don't know anybody, which is kind of nice.
So
he
bought the first private barrel of Pappy Van Winkle in like 2002. Before it was Pappy Van Winkle, right?
Yeah, of course.
And now his they're called Van Blankles because his last name is Blank. But those bottles cost him like $27 a piece, and they're going for $3,500 a piece right now in secondary. That's so crazy. And he's got two left in his collection. It's just a fascinating thing.
I don't get that stuff.
Yeah,
how it goes for crazy amounts.
Yeah, the selling of it.
But yeah, there's no deals left on Facebook anymore.
Yeah,
no.
And if there are, they're few and far between. And
yeah, I want to see this like a $12 bottle. Stopped. I paid $2.50 for it.
Yeah, I've stopped buying on Facebook. Yeah,
I don't.
Every now and then something.
I
cool
want to see
will
it
squeak.
To see it.
Yeah, yeah.
But
every now and then something cool will squeak through on eBay, even though it's not supposed to.
Sure.
So I've acquired a few that way.
Some great decanters on eBay because decanters, you can't see them. So
yeah.
You're like, and you can just list in the auction.
Yeah.
New, but what that really means is they're full.
Yeah.
Like, but then you can't say that they're full because, you know.
Oh, is that how that works?
But I mean, I'll see like even, like I picked up a 50s bottle of Old Taylor a couple months ago on eBay that I think it was probably an estate sale find.
Sure.
And the person who was selling it didn't really know what they had. And so they were truly just selling it to move it. That's the only deals left that I've found.
The estate finds are great. There's actually a sign up for Houston, and every once in a while you'll see everyone I've ever been to. I'll show up on Saturday morning. There's two types of people there. 90% of it is older people trying to salvage what they can from some house or whatever. And then I'll see two or three bourbon guys because there's in the pictures listed online, there'll be like a – you don't know if it's full or not, but it'll be like a decanter of old bits or something, and you're like, shit, that'd be fantastic.
My best estate sale find was in the Heights maybe 3 years ago. And I got it was all 1950 stuff. It was Old Forester, I.W. Harper. I got a full bottled in bond Kentucky Tavern still in the box.
It's ridiculous.
Amazing. I think I paid $200 for the whole deal.
For the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then
it was like 10 bottles. I didn't flip any. I'm not a flipper. I'm a drinker. I don't know that I've ever really flipped a bottle.
I have not.
I have, but it's been a few years, but it wasn't flipping for purpose. It's I have a smaller, older home from the 80s, and we at a certain point we had to build shelving in the garage, and I was like, I'll just offset the expense of building shelving by selling what I have. Cleared out a couple cases of old Weller 12, and built shelving in the garage. It was perfect. So,
yeah, it's a good way to do it.
Since then it's basically buying for the event, or you know, when I got TJ Miller in here, I wanted to make sure we had something cool, so we got some Hibikis and
cool. Yeah.
There's that.
So you're here for a reason today.
Yeah.
You guys are two thirds of the original Houston Bourbon Consortium. Mm-hmm. A couple, I want to say, probably 8 months ago, It was quite a while ago. You and Kevin came in here.
Yeah.
And we had the discussion. That was the first time I mentioned I really want to get Chris Shepherd on and never made the attempt to reach out.
Again. If you don't ask, the answer is no.
Yeah.
So we discussed like what the idea was behind it, how you guys came about it. You guys were doing a Maker's Mark pick, and all of a sudden the Maker's pick's probably the most famous of, I would say, the HBC lot. HBC's Makers went, I mean, people were going crazy at champing at the bit for it, right? So
it's crazy.
I remember when it was released, I think you may have messaged me and said that, hey, we're going to offload some of these to retail to kind of alleviate some whatever. And I remember someone mentioning it offhanded. You mentioned it to me directly that it was, hey, we're probably going to do it next Saturday or something.
Yeah.
And then I started getting texts from people like off of Facebook, offline. They were like, hey, just so you know, I hear Morgan's, you know, da da da. And then it sold out that day they had to put a limit on it. I mean, Houston Wine Merchant went nuts for it. I think
there were like 70 people in line around the building or something.
Antonio told me that like I had a six pack sitting there and like people were actually like arguing over that. And he's like, it's for Chris.
It's already spoken.
Come on. It says his name on the side of the box.
You don't want to know Chris?
Whatever.
Yeah. Have you guys ever thought about doing, as disgusting as this might sound, autographs or, you know, like the day of a release going up there and some people can take pictures with you guys?
Just getting it to the retailer, because we're not really organized. That's totally like we fly by the seat of our pants with all this. Like to actually,
I'm a little familiar with how offhanded that can be.
To actually organize something to the point where that could happen, like, dude, we're so lucky just to get it to the places and like be slightly organized enough to do
that. I found out after it was released. So like, legitimately, Antonio told me, he was like, hey, your stuff's sitting here and people are fighting over it.
Yeah.
Can you please come get it? And I was like, oh, really? I didn't know. That's cool. Yeah.
I mean, it feels good, right? Doesn't that give you any kind of – I mean, at this point, you guys are a bit of notoriety behind you.
I mean, it's fun. It's I think when we started doing picks together, it changed everything because now it's not just 8-Row Flint and Cultivari taking 250 bottles of everything at one time. So being able to have a wider variety – in our restaurants is something that we really enjoy.
I mean, between the two of us specifically, I think our palates are pretty similar, but slightly different in the same thing. Like he looks for certain things and I look for other things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't really know what those are. They just really taste good to me. But it seems like when we do a barrel or something,
we pretty much lock in on the same stuff
without knowing it was like, mm-hmm. Yep.
So I'll ask you this, and I've got more questions about this, but we'll save it for the next segment. But I'll ask this real quick, and then we can go to commercial. What is y'all's favorite pick that has been so far? What's the pick that – is it the Makers that was tied, that was tried to recreate the – was it 60s Old Fitz?
Mm-hmm.
Fitz?
Yeah, that was what we tried to match on that one. My personal favorites were our day at Will It last year. Picking with Larry and Susie and Sean. And
I wasn't there.
That was the first one, though.
Yeah. I had to leave.
It was the first Will It.
Oh, yeah, you did have to leave.
The partnership y'all did.
Yeah. Damn.
But you guys did a great job. I'm not arguing with that.
And then probably second favorite is our Russell's picks from last year. Yeah. Those were a lot of fun.
For me, just like I think the Makers one was delicious. as weird as it sounds, the Buffalo Trace one that we did last year, just the 10-year Buffalo Trace, was so outstanding.
Yeah,
and it's
the one that had the label around the neck that kind of wrapped around the bottle a little bit.
Yes, it was just standard issue
mm-hmm.
Buffalo Trace. I think that was the best one of the whole day.
Yeah, it was
because I think we did a Blanton's barrel, two Weller Antique barrels, and the Buffalo Trace barrel, and everybody was like, "The Buffalo Trace is fucking good."
Yeah,
and I can't wait for our Will It that's coming out now.
Who initiates making this happen? Because you guys obviously are managing your own restaurants, several concepts. Who's deciding? You know, like, hey,
I put
you.
Yeah,
you're like, hey, we want to go back and.
Yeah, I mean, I try to get all of our picks lined up at the beginning of each year. I think, and I don't know if this is actual truth, but I feel like there's more options because the distilleries have kind of gone through their inventory for the beginning of each year. So I try to get in when there's more options.
Okay. So I could tell you that several distillers, including Wild Turkey, told me the exact same thing. That
yeah, and Wild Turkey was the one that if you get kind of preempted me on that.
Pick earlier in the year, you're gonna have a little bit older stock. Yeah. First option, you know. I mean, obviously, when someone comes through and they're not tasting through everything that's been set aside for the whole year, but you are getting some of the older stuff right up front. So you guys, yeah, try to
and do I think Wild Turkey is to me one of the most interesting because Eddie Russell will seriously just walk around until you're either sideways or happy with what you picked.
He couldn't be more hospitable. Yeah. He's a great guy.
Yeah. It's a great like experience wise.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And we beautiful. Didn't get to do that in early year. March, no. Which I was sad about because our schedules just didn't
You didn't do up. A Russell's pick?
Mm-hmm. No.
I mean, we did four last year. So, I mean,
yeah.
We did two Russells and two
Kentucky Spirit.
Kentucky yeah. Spirits, yeah.
Yeah. Really holding out for Russell's rye barrel.
I keep pestering every year, but Campari recently has locked down. So it's I say this, it's going to be harder for me. It's not going to be harder for you guys, but we ask every year to bring that back because it's some of the best stuff that's ever been
out there. Man, I love Russell's rye so much.
It's some of the best rye that's on the market, yeah. Period, hands down.
Yeah.
And I have no idea what they're doing differently. So, yep, absolutely. So this Dan I actually picked up from Mr. Canfield, which you guys got to spend some time in March, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, he went with us this year, which is a lot of fun.
Such that a guy phenomenal dude.
Also has just an insane palate. He's so, humble about it.
He came to my event in March, and he was every year he comes. So the first year, I don't know if he's ever told you this story, but the first year we did it in Seabrook.
Okay.
Kept it small, under 300 people. And he came down with his friend Trey. And they went to Seabrook. They Ubered down from Houston. And at the time, Uber did not have a presence in Seabrook.
So they couldn't get back?
They couldn't get back. So I had actually called Uber beforehand and said, hey, we're doing this whiskey festival.
Mm-hmm.
I said, we're having this whiskey festival. Please make sure there's enough Uber drivers in the area. They said they would. They gave me a promo code. We promoted it. And then
there's two cars.
And then there's two cars. And Canfield couldn't come home. So I feel like I'm constantly in debt to Michael Canfield.
Yeah, fair enough.
4 years later. He got pampered at the social this year, though. We brought him in the green room and we're pouring the old stuff.
Nice. This tastes like bubblegum, man. Yeah. Like, that's crazy. This is what I find so much more interesting about old stuff than new stuff.
Just the difference in flavor profile. Oh,
everybody was
completely.
Like,
there's like a medicinal note on the back end.
Mm-hmm. Everybody was so different.
So with
well, there was no technology.
Yeah.
Everything was by hand.
Yeah.
There's now HBC is no longer.
Yeah.
And you guys actually figured that out decided that
we,
on this
yeah,
trip
we decided
back in March.
On the trip in March.
What happened there?
Well, you're not the only one that has brought up the crazy similarities between Houston Bourbon Society and Houston Bourbon Consortium.
On our logo.
Yeah. So it was always – I was constantly confused, right?
So I got to – just to interrupt you for a second. I got a photo from someone that was just at Makers.
Uh-huh.
And he's the main guy that orders for Total Wine nationally. So whatever the corporate office is in Maryland or whatever it is, Kevin sends me a photo. He's like, hey, you guys are famous. And we're on the wall at Makers, right?
Uh-huh.
And then on a menu later that night, and he saw a picture, but it was Houston Bourbon Consortium. Both of the bottle and the menu item was y'all, not us.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, you guys are killing it. I'm like, it's not us.
Not quite the same.
Well, from inception, it was confusing. And I think we put so little thought into it right out of the gate. Like literally in the car
most
on
things
the
happen.
Way.
Yeah. And it was like, what do you think of this name? It was like, I don't care.
What is consortium?
Yeah, I don't understand what we're even talking about.
So we took – since Kevin kind of left the hospitality industry in general, we decided to –
Because it was Mega you three that were yeah. that were all yeah, running yeah. the Instagram account and the
he was mostly running the Instagram account.
Because last time was he running their website? Because when you came in last time, you didn't even know that you guys had a website.
Yeah, is there a website?
I didn't
there's
know
a that website with you guys. There's a Houston Bourbon Consortium website.
Didn't know that either.
Yeah,
Tejas Kentucky Club does not have a website.
No.
Yeah, so we're like, you know what? That was confusing from the jump. Let's just use this as a clean break to do something different. And when I started organizing this,
it's the same thing, trip, same concept, different picking group because it's you.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically us, Weston, and then it's an evolving door of a revolving door of people from the restaurants.
Cool. Sure.
Yeah. I tried to take at least one or two of our managers with us from across the concepts on every trip because I think it's just such an eye-opening. Like, until you see massive fermenting tanks at Buffalo Trace, you don't understand the scale on which they're making this stuff, right? So it's a great learning experience for our guys, whether it's a Cultivari or 8-Row or wherever. And then Weston's got a phenomenal palate too, so it's always fun.
I've wanted to get to know him more. I don't think I included him in our on-premise chat with their beer that's coming out or is about to come out or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
He seems like your – would you say he's your right-hand person for pretty much everything? Or
Weston? That's me.
Okay, so sorry. Yeah. I knew Weston in the chat, but I haven't really
– We're all good friends, but he is – I mean, he totally runs the beverage program.
Yeah, our spirits. Yeah, he does all our spirits. Mm-hmm. The bar.
He seems like a really
– And it's such, I mean, always such a deep dive on the nerdy shit. Like, it's crazy. He's so encyclopedic.
He really is. Like, you can start talking about something. He's like – and I'm like, you're 25.
Yeah, stop trying to impress me. You already got the job.
But you know what?
How does this work?
For his
how do you remember all of this?
Generation,
how have you done what you've done so much so far?
For his generation, man, there's very few people in our professional industry that take their job as seriously as he does. Mm-hmm. And I think that is so – like
– He's special.
He is. I mean, I think it's super cool.
Would you say that –
Because everybody wants to be spoon-fed shit now.
Sure.
And that's so annoying.
But would you say that it's more common now than ever?
Yeah.
Because no, not the spoon-fed thing. But I mean, like, I see people like Sarah Troxel or the, you know, these really, like, really driven, lifelong, they've made a career out of the hospitality industry.
Yeah.
You know, like your Bobby Hugels and your, you know, Elise Bleckman,
right? It's easy to name off a dozen of those.
Compared to
considering
the
size of the city that we live in and how big the hospitality industry is, it's a shockingly few amount of people.
Hmm.
So you say it's still very common to just not have someone like the Westons or the
– Yeah.
Well, opinion. Not somebody that's going to deep dive into all the information that's available to them, you know. And that's,
right.
You know, goes for cooks or goes for
– Anything.
Bar, yeah. Like –
I think that speaks to a much deeper hole.
Yeah.
That's
a whole
other
show.
This,
sure.
Which is just staffing at restaurants and bars in Houston.
You know, and what people are willing to learn these days and what people are willing to do all the time.
I 100% agree, and I know it's not the same comparison, but just when we first had the concept for this whiskey festival, we had a lot of people who loved the idea, said, I want to be a part of this, I want to help. And then that's right after the event. And then you got to wait 8 months for the next event. And in that time, everyone
Those hands don't raise as fast, do they?
Correct. It's when it finally comes time to get people who want to be involved, and we're not talking about for free, you know, paying them and them being a part of it. And it's amazing how many people, for a lack of I feel like this word doesn't give the unctuousness that I want it to have, and that's flake. Mm-hmm. A flake isn't quite severe enough, but they say they want to be involved, and then they're just not, you know. In theory, it's like, I want to be a successful person when I grow up. Well, how late are you sleeping in? I'm sleeping in until noon every day. Well, then you're not going to be successful.
Sorry, I've been up since 4:30 this morning.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. yeah, but
that's ridiculously good.
Mm-hmm.
That 78 turkey is just as fantastic. I actually found. I had a buddy that just happened to be passing through some West Texas town, some small hole in the wall. Liquor store and found a turkey decanter from 78 full.
Seriously?
Tax strip still intact.
And those are few and far between now.
Extremely few and far between, and I couldn't be happier with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm excited just kind of about the way all this is going. We still don't have a plan for the Tejas Kentucky Club. Like,
who came up with the name?
I did. But just in like texting this group, I just knee-jerk reaction was like, called it the Tejas Kentucky Club. And because the Kentucky Club is in Juarez, Mexico.
Sure.
And
I didn't know
there was this massive Texas influence just across the border in Juarez in the 50s and actually going back earlier than that. So it's like, I don't know, this is kind of hand-holding thing with the
border.
You can
do merch?
Stuff. I don't know. Sure. We have a good logo now.
I say that.
Who's buying that?
Somebody commented on that.
I would buy that. I'm asking out of – not out to be a cynical asshole.
Maybe that's
asshole.
How we monetize it.
But that is the way to monetize it, yeah. So the logo's great. And the shirts that we use are great, but the printing process of the company that we use for our shirts just garbage. So I like the idea of like a nice soft textured shirt with that logo that you showed me, because the logo you showed me shows very much like is that looks very much like the Knob Creek matte paper looking. You know what I mean?
Was that intentional?
No. Like they don't care. You guys
we rip everybody.
You guys do enough with Beam. I think they can relax on this one. But I think you guys absolutely should. If you've got the website, depending on who's in control of that website, just change the name to Kentucky Tejas Club. Yeah. Throw some shirts up there. Yeah. I would buy a Kentucky Tejas shirt.
Yeah.
And I know a group of about 5,500 that maybe 10% of them bought shirts. Hey. That'd be pretty great.
Side business.
I'm already on it.
I've got people for that. So Chris Shepherd, man, I'll wait till you're done texting, but I really want to know. I mean, you're food king. You're Houston food king.
That's weird. You've
been on Netflix shows. And what would you prefer?
I don't know.
Food queen?
No.
Don't want to assume there's a gender stereotype there. You don't want to skip right over that.
I mean, whatever.
You've done a lot for Houston. You know that.
I mean, you've done Netflix. Morgan's done a Netflix pilot pitch that hasn't gotten that far yet. We'll see how it goes. By the way, did you see the...
It looks great.
It looks great, right? Yeah, they did such a great job.
What'd you do?
We...
I TV now.
Maybe we'll see.
TV star.
We'll see.
I want to see it.
I'll show you the intro. It's got his name in it. So we had an idea for a show in Houston that would kind of showcase the city's food culture, but also the obsession that people have outside of the bar with these incredible collections and that sort of thing. So we featured Morgan, and Scotch has got like the stereotype of being a rich man's game, but you can go to Aero Flint right now and have some of the best goddamn street tacos. Made with Brussels sprouts and a great scotch or a mezcal or a rum or whatever. So I actually had my first, what was it? That frozen thing with wine. What was it called?
Frosé.
I had my first, I had my first frosé.
How did it take this long?
I don't know, man. I don't know. So, we shot a pilot episode that we're editing and then we're shopping around. We're pitching. So it's gotten nowhere, but we have.
You like how it turned out?
So far. I can't get over that opening shot.
Yeah.
Did you see the shot from inside the bottle
and
pulled out as it was? I mean, it was insane. So I've got the 30-second intro clip I'll show you.
Cool.
The idea is beyond the bar, just to kind of, showcase the city's passion for brown water. And Seattle's got an incredible scene. They've got that freaking – have you ever been to Cannon in Seattle?
Yeah.
They've got bottles going back to the 1800s. They don't have a lot
of them.
Yeah, you do.
He ain't cheap.
Yeah, you do.
History's
He's
not
got
cheap.
Him. He doesn't necessarily want you to drink them.
Sure. That's Speaking true. Of drinking them, I'll take that 78 turkey off your hands. I'd like to hear the story about the – I know I saw the article about it, about the big smoke. You've got that.
Southern Smoke.
Wouldn't you want to do that twice a year?
There
was talk about you doing it.
Kind of.
It's there's only one big one, which is in the fall, but
so big smoke, like, by the way, is a cigar event in Vegas.
spring is like it's too much to do a big festival twice a year. Plus, like, fucking people get burnt out on it.
Sure,
yeah.
And so
tried that one year. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, two things is hard to do. So this year, like, we started talking about it, and we found that the need for getting people funds year round is an actual thing, you know? And so instead of just donating one giant check to an organization, it became a emergency relief fund that we started with the application process and a verifying committee and then an awards committee. And
so it does it year round instead of just one big thing.
Yeah. So like if someone was in need right now, like they could go online to SouthernSmoke.org, put in an application, fill out the application, and the organization will start dealing with it. I say we, not me. And that's a very clear thing that it's very anonymous. I have no idea.
Sure.
I don't know how much money goes out. Actually, I do, because our executive director was like, hey, we just donated $9,000 today to an individual. Cool. Like, I don't know what for. I don't know why. I don't know anything. I know that the process.
He kind of lets you know.
The process went through. And it has many layers to get there, but it's really fast as well. So we understood that after this past fall that there's a definite need, because there was an individual that was in a motorcycle accident and needed to get – he just went through his fourth brain surgery, and the fourth one was to put his skull back in. And the only reason I know this is because his mom told me to come to the hospital.
Sure.
you know, insurance was up. They said, you're done. And it was like, go to a hospice.
That's or horrifying.
Find out, you know,
jeez,
do whatever. And his mom was like, well, what do I do? What's the best case scenario? And they're like, you need to get into TEER, which isn't financially available for everyone. You know, if you don't have,
I'm sorry, what do you mean?
TEER is like a high end, like a trauma center that is a rehab facility.
Okay.
And really stresses on really bad cases, but it was $100,000 cash up front. And so we went through the process and they had 24 hours to figure it out. And we walked in with a check for $100,000 and like, make your son live, get him to live.
That's absolutely insane. So just to, and before I ask this question, were we recording a little bit before? Okay. So we'll make sure we'll get the front end on this, but how much did you guys raise last year at Southern Smoke?
$450,000.
Absolutely ridiculous.
So in 4 years, we've donated back $1.4 million, which is an insane number for a bunch of us just in the backyard cooking, you know?
Yeah.
In essence, in the back parking lot, just having a party, mm-hmm. doing what we love to do. And
this is, you said, in 4 years.
4 years, yeah.
So I remember the second and third year, because I remember we had a guy up in Dallas kind of reach out to me and say this thing was happening. And we kind of pushed it out. We did an email blast to our followers or whatever. And that was the first time I realized the magnitude of what this event is. It's actually a substantial event. I mean, you guys.
Yeah, every year it gets bigger.
Yeah.
You guys.
Planning it right now. Like, we have Southern Smoke Spring coming up next week and planning fall as we speak. You know, I've already got the asks out to chefs from around the country coming in, and like sponsorships already rolling in. And where it became big is when we decided after year two, like, because the first 2 years we would like cut a check at the end of the event and be like, yay, we did this. I hope nobody sends us an invoice because I don't have any more money. Yeah. And so I was like, we need to start an actual foundation. And so Catherine Lott, our executive director, came on board and has really handled so much of it. In fact, all of the back end, which is really important to do because she's the one meeting with sponsors and like, okay, well, what do you get for your sponsorship? Yeah. And so without sponsors, like I think we all know, like it gets really expensive.
But yeah. Super expensive. Yeah.
When someone's like, here's the stage, here's money for airline tickets for all the people coming in. Here's, you know, food, here's this, here's that. And so when you start being able to put money to the bottom line, it really makes a difference. And so.
What I love about it though is that it's still small enough that there's no bullshit as to how funds get distributed. Just like Chris was saying.
Yeah.
So, hey,
pretty straightforward.
You know, this guy needs $100,000 to get into this deal, and you don't have to go through, you know, a million hoops to get this check written. You're like, you need this right now. We have this right now.
Let's go.
So the name, it just, I assume that there's a 501c3. Mm-hmm. You know, is it called Southern Smoke?
Southern Smoke, yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it had a different name or not. Oh. So you guys, in the fall event happens. You said the spring event happens next week.
Yep. Fall will be October 6th.
October 6th. And so are we going to keep the two-year thing, or you think you're going to?
Yeah. I mean, the thing with this one, this weekend coming up, like we have three dinners with chefs at the restaurants. So Sunday night we have a dinner with Aaron Franklin at Georgia James. And then Monday night, Jamie Malone at UB Preserve. And then Thursday night, we have Chris Cosentino and Jamie Bissonette for the closing dinner at 1/5. And then Wednesday night, Dave Arnold's going to be at Preserve doing singing drinks all night. So that'll be fun. But I think the biggest, you know, those dinners are all sold out except for like Dave Arnold's just kind of a come and hang out, do what you want. But
he's a fascinating guy.
Yeah. Just having to source things for him is like insane. I don't know where to get liquid nitrogen, and that's just not in my wheelhouse. So, but the important thing for me is like Tuesday and Wednesday is the part where our community can come together and really support, because there's folks like Morgan and his group that are, you know, just restaurants all across the city that are doing the citywide steak night. So it's 20 restaurants across the city that 44 Farms has donated all the beef, and Chef's Produce has donated all the produce. So it doesn't cost the restaurant anything, which is huge for us, because we don't want with this organization that it costs a lot for restaurants to be a part of. Like, and that's always been the task, right? For any event where we ask to go do something, it's cumbersome and costly for us to go do it if there's no return. This is, we want to pay you for everything. Like, we want to make sure that you don't come out of pocket, and it's just a fundraising. It's actually fundraising and not funds taking away. So, you know, there's 20 restaurants across the city. They're all doing a different steak night on Tuesday and Wednesday. And depending on whatever price they sell it for, or whatever cut they've suggested or whatever cut they've requested to do, each one's going to be different. And so you can go out and have a steak. Money goes 100% goes back to Southern Smoke. So,
is there a website or a list of those restaurants that they can find online?
Yeah, southernsmoke.org. Yeah.
So it's all going to be on southernsmoke.org.
Yeah.
Southernsmoke.org. That one.
You guys are Indianola, right? And Cultivari?
And Cultivari. Yeah.
And so it's, you know, it's all over the board. Like, it's all of our concepts. Hugo's is doing it. These guys are doing it. Passive Revisions, Kata, Goodnight Charlie's, Wynn. Triss up in the Woodlands.
You're naming a lot of people I like.
Yeah, you know, yeah, and it's
David
like
David Keck is awesome. Yeah,
because we didn't want to just do it with
Sean Beck.
A couple of people, like, we wanted to branch it out. It's like, you want to go have Vietnamese? It's cool. Go to Wynn and have this. You want to go to Nymphs on Navigation? Yeah, I'd love to have
Wynn's and, you know, interpretation of steak night.
Yeah. they're doing stuff at Nymphs on Navigation as well. So it's like, you can go all over. You don't have to just go to like specific restaurants. It's pretty cool. And the goal for that is that I don't really know how this gets done, really. Like, sure. I'm kind of nervous because, like, are people making reservations? Are people going to go out? Like, I want this to be a big thing, because then next year maybe it's 30 restaurants, and then the next year it's 40 restaurants, and the next year it's 50 restaurants. And it becomes something that our industry as a whole in our city can get behind, and people in our city, consumers in our city, can get behind this and really support this. Because it's
been massively successful. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, it seriously takes care of our own.
It's a fun ass event. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's important to mention too. It's like, this is not just a show up, pay a bunch of money, and be like, oh, this isn't even that fun. Like, it's tremendously fun. Like, yeah. It's awesome.
Have you guys ever thought about doing something similar, expanding on it past, you know, and doing like, you know, like Restaurant Week, where you've got, you know what I mean? Like,
that's kind of where Steak Night's going.
Right.
That's where I would like to see it go.
It's starting to take on a life of its own, which is cool.
It is. It is. The big festival, though, I mean, people are like, hey, why don't you do 4 days and do music? And I'm like, why don't you say no? You want to do that? Come on, man. But like, for us, it's
a lot of work.
We're all running restaurants and we're all doing things. And so it's hard to really do more than one day and ask somebody to do one day, because I know – you know, I do events all over the country.
I mean, to do it right.
And it's hard.
Agricole shuts down to do it. Like, we have cookers fabricated. Like, everybody takes it seriously, which is also a lot of fun, too.
Yeah. I mean, we shut down our restaurants. And like, it's a lot.
Have you guys ever thought about adding a, you know, like doing it? Is it always going to be in that same area? Are you talking about
the footprint keeps growing?
Yeah, the footprint does
keep growing. I mean, when Legacy came on board, they were like, "Yeah, use our parking lots," and all of a sudden it was like, "Oh man, we just doubled in size." Yeah. Okay, here we go.
I mean, it basically turns into like a mini Ren Faire, but just the food aspect of it. Like, just like the footprint, the map keeps growing. Yeah. The amount of food. I mean, I get meat sweats just thinking about the amount of food.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out a cool way to do it this year, so it's a little bit different and a little bit more engaging for, especially for like all the local chefs. And
that's the hard part too, is you're always trying to innovate, think of ways to make it more engaging each year. It's like a business. If you make $1 billion 1 year and you make $1 billion next year, you failed. Like, you have to make more. It has to be more impressionable, make a bigger impact so that people want to keep coming back.
It's putting food out for 5 hours, you know, with VIP, but it's one of those things, like, I don't ever really want to lay that on a restaurant to stand there and hand out, you know, hammer out food for 5 hours. Like, that's a lot, you know? And so the local chefs, we've always just kind of rotated in at times, but then that started to cause little issues, because people come up and like, I thought Ryan Pear was up right now. He's like, no, that was 2 hours ago, man. That's posted everywhere. I'm not really sure what to say right now, but he's completely done, or whatever, you know, whatever it may be. And so it's just like, how do I get this more engaging for everybody?
How many people do you guys see? Do you guys get any kind of attendance?
Like 1,800.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
2,000.
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, with sponsors, it can be close to that. And but I still think that we could definitely have another 500 or 600 more people, I mean, without a shadow of a doubt, but without it being just too crowded.
Sure.
You know, and that's
elbow to elbow.
I think about the guest experience a lot, and what they're having to go through. Cause like, I think right now there's not, like, outside of like Franklin, which I don't, a lot of lines. Like, the lines are pretty short for food.
And there'll be 150 people in Aaron's house.
Man, when we opened up the gates, it was like a freaking stampede, man. People are just I always walk to the gate, like when VIP opens and then when general admission opens, I walk to the gate and I shake hands with every single person that walks to the door. And I was like 30 seconds late, and it was legitimately like a people stampede. Just running past me. And I was like, what are you all doing? Like, there's plenty here. And they're like, Franklin. And it was like, so you guys are just automatically putting yourself in a line.
That's, yeah, that's
for hours.
Yeah, yeah.
There's delicious roasted oysters over here. There's like short ribs over here. Like, hold up, man. Like, well, he's got plenty of food, but like, it just happens.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And props to him for garnering that.
Yeah.
Let me see your old bards down there.
Yeah.
Kentucky only release. You actually started doing quite a bit with Willett recently, right? I mean, you guys have become real close real fast.
Drew and I got introduced last year. Hello.
Through a bit of an icon.
Yeah. I mean, through Larry Rice. Yeah. Larry's become a good friend of ours over the years. We do as many barrel picks with Larry and Susie as we possibly can just because it's so much fun. He sat in this year on our Buffalo Trace pick just
because
he was.
Just because.
Yeah.
He wanted to come hang out. He did one like 2 days before that, right?
The day before that.
The day before, yeah.
He did one with Fred Minnick for Bourbon and Beyond. And the next day he was like, what are y'all doing? It's like, wow, we're going to be at Buffalo Trace. Like, what time?
Yeah.
He just shows up.
Because it was like, I want to eat it. Was it Rick's White Light?
Yeah. Rick's White Light Diner, which if you're ever in Frankfurt and you're like in a bind for lunch, you got to go to Rick's White Light
Diner. Even if you're not in a bind, you just go eat there.
Are you saying Rick's White Lightning?
Rick's White Light Diner.
It is diner. So good. It's probably like minutes from Buffalo Trace.
12 seats, maybe, you know,
when
15 at most.
When we all go there, we literally crash, I think, every seat that's there. But it's awesome. So anyway, Drew and I became friends through Larry after last year's pick that we did for Southern Smoke for the Hurricane Harvey.
Oh, I didn't know you guys did a pick for Southern Smoke.
So we did. It was called Storm Dollar.
That was the
that was the Ryan Phoenix, Bourbon. Right? Well, we did Flood Dollar.
Okay, sorry.
With Copper and Kings and Joe.
But the Willett was called
But the Willett was Storm Dollar Rye and Storm Dollar Bourbon. And we split those with the Silver Dollar in Louisville. So got to be friends with Drew over the course of two or three picks and just kind of being out there. And I was like, man, I love what you're doing. Like, everybody just loses their mind over Buffalo Trace stuff, right? It's like anything that's got an Eagle Rare or a Blanton's or a Weller Antique, they're like, this is the best bourbon that could ever be.
Or had. Buffalo Trace, right?
Or Buffalo Trace. I mean, and
it was a solid.
You know, when people ask me what I'm really excited about, what I'm into, it's Willett. I mean, I think it's such a crazy scenario that Willett exists under, in that they're still a small family-owned distillery that has insane infrastructure and zero debt attached to it. Like, they have 40,000 barrels resting that they don't owe any money on. Like, that is unheard of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they've been renovating the last couple of years. It's been a gorgeous renovation.
Like, they've got that restaurant open, yeah?
Yeah, the restaurant's now open. They you know, they have a bar up there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the one y'all were put that
it's where we did the pit.
Gorgeous. Yeah, okay. I didn't know that was right upstairs.
Yeah, yeah. So it's right upstairs from the tasting room.
I'm sorry. I'm a poor person compared to well, I'm no Morgan Weber, so to speak.
Well, you know, it was so cold. Normally, you know, every time we've been at Willett, we always do the
– we start from
We always do the barrel picks in the Rick houses. No, but so it was so cold, and it was like 11 degrees. It was so fucking cold. Mm-hmm. I'm not built for that.
We went in January with Wade. It was literally 1 degree.
Dude, I've never been. I have zero patience for that. I don't like the hot. I'm kind of a moderate guy. Cellar temp is where I need to
cellar
live.
Temp.
Yeah.
Give me that 45 degree weather.
Yeah. So it was so cold that we did the picks upstairs in the new bar, and he's explaining it to us, and it's like a beautiful back bar. Sorry, I didn't mean to hit the mic. Beautiful back bar, and it's all of this just old, like single barrels of Willett.
Of like crazy stuff.
And,
right?
You know, antique chartreuse, antique Campari, antique everything, right? Like, Drew, what's going on?
He built
on
a man cave on the second floor.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But now it's legal to sell antique booze in Kentucky. And he's like, what are you doing here? And he's like, well, we have all this library of stuff. Like, we keep 6 bottles of every barrel pick that happens. We still have
just 6?
We still have
some more, yeah.
We still have all of the old stuff that my dad bought from Ed Foote's time at Old Bernheim. We've got, you know, this is massive library of insane stuff. And so we thought, why don't we open a bar and sell it? And if people want cocktails made from that, why don't we do that?
Vintage cocktail.
And I was like, and that's how you just created the most interesting bar in the country.
Yeah. So just
overnight.
So we did that the second year. We partnered with Chris Morris. You know Chris Morris, right? Yeah. And at the time, it was this place called Preamble down in Clear Lake. They're still called Preamble, but it's got kind of like a 1776 vibe to it.
I'm going to drink the rest of this damn.
Yeah. As soon as you walk in, there's a constitution written out and it's like framed. But so anyways, what we did is we sourced a bunch of old ingredients going back to World War II. So from like, I think the earliest bottle we had was 41, and it was like 41-year-old scotch. Or no, sorry. It was from 1941, but it was 10-year-old scotch.
Okay.
So, you know, 31.
Yeah.
And then we got some old, what's that liqueur with the fat bottom, and it's usually wrapped in paper with a twist up top. Starts with a D. There's a, it's right on the tip of my, I'm not a cocktail guy.
Drambuie?
No.
I have no idea.
There's a, yeah, things. No, there's an old,
D's.
It's got kind of a D's. So stupid. No more dad for you. I forget, but we basically sourced a bunch of cocktail liqueurs.
Yeah.
Including old, not old chartreuse, but stuff from every decade going back 80 years.
That's so
back
cool.
To World War II. Yeah. And then we found Winston Churchill's great-grandson. And we invited him to the event, and he came, and then Chris made period accurate cocktails from each decade.
So
there was
cool.
One particular
that's fun.
One
fucking nerd. Yeah. I love it. Just nerded out.
There is one particular cocktail made that was popular during the 40s, so he recreated that using vintage ingredients.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
Then the 50s, the 60s.
Oh, cool.
So it was kind of neat.
Yeah.
Definitely not to what
well,
Will's
I'm just,
doing, but
I was just so fascinated with it, and he's such Drew's such a nice guy, and their family is so involved in everything that goes on.
That's another one I'm trying to get on the show, but I have asked, and he definitely said no.
Drew,
I bet if not, he's in town,
yeah.
He would
just
do it.
Just didn't get the answer. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Whenever they switched distributors, they were talking about getting him in market, and I said, "Hey, if you come, do the show." He just hasn't come yet. So when he does get into market, I'm sure he'll do the show. But well, I'm such a fan of Willett and what they've done.
What I find so interesting about them is they have the flexibility, they have the latitude to do some true experimentation. Like other distilleries in Kentucky are so massive that it takes a lot of experimentation to move the needle on their production. And Willett is at the point where they can just kind of try a little bit of this for a little while and just shift, which is like nobody has that flexibility.
Yeah. Campari's not doing it. Buffalo Trace isn't doing it.
I think 20 years from now, you'll look back and you'll be like, that guy changed bourbon.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think he's doing some really
I mean, he's
cool
not in Bourbon Hall of Fame yet, right?
I mean,
he definitely should be. I just realized, can we just keep going? Find a cut point.
Yeah. He's got so much flexibility to do. And what he wants to do is not create bourbon that tastes like other people's bourbon.
Sure.
Which
is what Texas is trying to do.
Yeah, but that's also another show. the flavor profiles that Willett is going after in their, I think, six different mash bills gives them so much flexibility to make interesting flavor profiles that don't truly exist within the bourbon category
sure.
Right now. And so we're sitting there, and I'm like, hey, man, I absolutely am obsessed with y'all's approach to this. What can we as a restaurant group, a tiny little dinky restaurant group in Houston, do to help y'all out? Because we appreciate the barrel picks. Like, we love doing that. But
I wouldn't say rinky dink. I don't mean to blow smoke up both your butts, but in 20 years from now, people are going to look back in this era of Houston's food scene and bar scene. I think this is the golden era of the bar scene in Houston. And I'm, again, not blowing smoke up your ass, but the Chris Shepherds, the Morgan Webbers, the Bobby Hugels, they are setting a precedence that can't be ignored.
I guess what really intrigues me is that for our restaurant group, everything is still super day by day. Like for his restaurant group, everything is still super day by day. And when you go to Willett, it's still super day by day. It's like,
so you're the same as Willett. Got it.
You still see so many like, yeah, we're not doing this because we're not cash flowing to put this kind of money into that project right now. But one day we will. So
it's something you
just
want to do. You're just waiting for it to get there.
Interesting growth. Every time we go out there, there's slower, more interesting growth. Like they're just whittling away at all these projects that like he said, you know, my dad bought all this bourbon from old Bernheim in the 90s. And at 25, 26, 27 years old, 28 years old, that was good bourbon. Like it wasn't over oaked. It's something about the way our rick houses breathe and heat and cool, expand and contract. They age bourbon well for long periods of time. What I'm working on is maybe something that will never come to fruition in my lifetime. Like
he's fairly young though, right? I mean,
he's in his 30s. mid to late 30s. Yeah. I think we're similarly aged.
What am I doing with my life?
No doubt. But so he's like, I don't know what 35-year-old bourbon tastes like.
35?
Yeah. Because I haven't – no, like every old bourbon that I've had that's in that range wasn't designed to go that long.
Sure.
Right, it just happened to go that
way. I think that's been the downfall of our new barrel requirement.
Yeah.
That's the reason why we don't see super old. And if it is super old, it's most often garbage.
So with the stuff that they're laying down, he's designing stuff to hopefully be able to go that long and not be just an oak bomb.
But how would you even implement that? How would you design distillate to go
longer? I mean, I think that has to do with mostly the wood that stuff's aged in. Yeah. You know.
He's doing cool things.
Yeah.
For sure.
Much lower on the char, probably, I would imagine.
Much.
I think the
and longer age. Longer and age on the wood before
bigger barrels.
Longer toast.
Longer seasoning. Yeah. Is that what you mean? Yeah. Yard seasoning.
Yeah.
It's been an interesting development. I mean, like I said before the show, I know that Willett is starting to release barrel picks to Texas. So we're going to see an influx this year specifically of these, you know, 2, 3, mm-hmm. 8, 10, maybe more of these Willett barrel picks show up. And it's at a nice little 5-6 year mark that I think is pretty. I mean,
yeah, I think ours is 6.5.
Yeah. I haven't tasted yours yet, but I had Poison Girls at the event the other night. I was very happy with it. So,
man, I just think they're doing some super interesting stuff. And if we can put Old Bardstown in our 90 in our well and help them cash flow so they can do cooler experiments.
I think we just changed over too.
I'm into that. Yeah.
I think we just changed over.
So this is the well then, right?
So that's Bardstown bottled in bond. That's the Kentucky only release. But the 90 proof version of that is what we use in our well. And everybody's like, dude, what do you drink at home all the time? And I mean, Bardstown 90, very old Barton bottled in bond. Like, I don't drink crazy stuff at home at night.
I do. I
try to.
I'm kidding.
He's like, I'm Chris motherfucking Shepherd. I do with my wife. Like, if my wife and I are just in a mood to just have a little moment together, because I always treat these like time capsules, right? This is a little piece of history.
Yeah.
I was on this other guy's show. This guy I went to high school with has his own show in Clear Lake, and I love the guy. Couldn't be nicer. Pierre Castillo. He has a show called On Air with Pierre. And he was part of LaPorte's got a little hunky-dory town of like, you know, 20,000 people, 30,000 people. And they did a time capsule a few years back, right after I graduated high school. And
like 2013?
2005. And I'm 31. And
fucking baby.
Yeah.
Baby.
Little baby.
And they make a big deal about what they put in the time capsule. It's like cards from the elementary school.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we're staring at, like, this is history. From 78. That's,
dude,
what is that? Am I doing it right? 42 years ago.
I like to think about what my parents were doing, like, when this was bottled, this stuff. Like, my dad had just graduated from college when this damn.
When did Alaska and Hawaii become?
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the kind of stuff. It's like you kind of want to get on Wikipedia and go down the deep dive and see.
You're like we weren't.
What was going on in America?
This is the year we landed on the moon.
Yeah,
absorb that. This city.
Yeah,
I mean, Houston went to the moon on that day.
And you know, like that lot allotment of estate sale bourbon that I found, the old Forrester, the I.W. Harper, all that. Like, I don't like all of it. Right. Like it's interesting, but it's different.
I have 65 I.W. Harper. I think you'll enjoy.
Yeah,
I picked it up, got a hell of a deal out of it out of Europe for $400 with shipping, and that means $175 of that was shipping.
Yeah,
so I got a really
it's
good deal.
To it's expensive to do that. Shit.
Yeah. It's ridiculous to ship back.
I'm like, man, I got this for a steal. Oh fuck, man, happened?
What I'm. You know, and I'll taste people on it just kind of as a novelty when they come over the house.
Sure,
I'm like, dude, this is from 1956. It's like whatever. It's different. It tastes like cherry sucrets. Like,
oh, it's a good way
so
of putting
weird,
it, yeah.
You know? But what I want people to move away from is this definitive answer on whether this is good or bad.
Oh, I talked about that with Ed Bly last week. I get it. Your dad was a Buffalo Trace drinker. Just because you're trying something from Indiana or something from out of state doesn't mean it's bad. It just means it's not your thing yet.
I saw some dude on...
Can I go back to this?
Yes, absolutely.
I get down on this.
On this HBS the other day, he was like, oh, fucking McKenna Tenure. This is garbage.
Why is it garbage?
And I'm like, man, maybe you didn't like it.
Sure.
But
it's not garbage.
It's not garbage.
For sure, it's not garbage.
Like, I don't know. And I don't even know if I agree with Fred that it's the best whiskey in the world this year.
No, I definitely don't agree with
but stuff.
I think
not
Old
bad.
Forester Rye this year. No,
that
new that
should have been.
That should have been up there.
That's lights out.
For $20.
Yeah, lights out.
For $20, it's hands down the best release. Regularly available.
Wife and I literally drank a bottle of it in 2 nights.
We had 2 cases of it left from the
Probably
social.
Probably shouldn't have said that.
No, who cares? I mean, if anyone deserves a drink, it's your wife, right? I mean, the newborn?
Yeah.
God.
But I want people to move away from this is garbage or this is bad whiskey. It's not your thing. Maybe it's just different. It's like, I heard this guy, I'm not comparing McKenna Tenure to the Mona Lisa, but like this guy that was, he was like, oh man, the Mona Lisa sucks. And I was like, well, you know, when you say the Mona Lisa sucks, it doesn't put the Mona Lisa on trial.
Sure.
Like it is, you might not understand the Mona Lisa. You might not even like it, but that doesn't mean it doesn't suck.
I definitely don't want to stand in 7 hours and fucking see it.
Yeah.
Right. None of that says that this is bad.
Yeah, it's not barbecue.
No.
So it's like, let's just.
I'm not doing that either.
I think new people to bourbon are the.
The worst.
I was going to say most peculiar.
So, yeah. No, I'll say the worst.
but the goddamn worst. It's like, oh, this fucking sucks. And it's like.
The only thing worse than someone who thinks they're a bourbon expert, I've been drinking bourbon for 37 years. No, you've been drinking Buffalo Trace for 30. Like, you haven't drank anything outside your comfort zone.
Yeah.
The only thing worse than the old snob is the new snob, the one that's not willing to try outside their comfort zone. And listen, we've had long discussions about the pros and cons of a Facebook group like HBS. I love the group ultimately. But what we've done for sure is try to branch outside our comfort zone. We did MB Roland, which was young stuff, Copper and Kings. I had a discussion with Fred Minnick in Louisville last year back when he was on there's a food show. They just did a food show that was done in Kentucky with all the bourbon distillers. It's like the Chopped.
I think it was Chopped.
So he just did Maker's Mark, and I had a discussion with him. Copper and Kings is killing it in Texas. They do a great job here. But he's like, no one buys it in Kentucky. Like, no one even heard.
I can see that.
I mean, I could see it too. I mean, the name of the episode I did with Joe was that it was a madman, wanted to open a distillery in bourbon country making brandy, which it's fantastic. And I think that eventually people will realize widely accepted that this is fantastic brandy. But it's like,
I don't go to Louisville for that though.
Correct.
And that's the general consumer, right?
Sure.
You don't go to Louisville to drink brandy.
Right.
And I mean, I enjoyed it, but I'll be honest with you. There's like four or five bottles of that sitting at my house, and I haven't touched it.
Can't keep it at my house
because
we burned through it.
Yeah, it's something that my whole point is whether or not you.
Yeah, but Lindsay won't. She drinks. She's
champagne wine. Hey, no complaint on the wine part.
Yeah, none at all.
The whole idea. Whether or not you like something or don't like something is that I think that you should continue being a minister. And I've said this about you and April Flint. You guys have done a pretty good job of just your collection of – it's not a whiskey bar. You also have mezcals and rums, that's very reflective
of my home bar, you know.
Like right. Pasha, same thing. Pasha's got 1,000 bottles
so
in this
diverse.
Bar.
Yeah.
And it's split up.
I don't.
But it's okay to be a whiskey guy and have your own personal collection of whiskey.
Like for me, like I won't even go down the Scotch trail.
Really?
Fuck no.
What about it turns you off?
It scares the shit out of me.
Because of the cost?
I'm not too far off.
I know what happened when I started to really love bourbon.
Dude.
Oh, so you're afraid that
it's such a deep hole.
You're going to have to build some shelving in your garage.
my lady will not. Like, she's pretty understanding when she sees me. Like, yesterday I walked through the front door with 2 six-packs. Like, she's like, okay, cool.
6 packs of what? Whiskey or beer?
Whiskey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2 cases of beer. Whiskey is a different conversation. Yeah.
And I started putting it up on the shelves, and she's just like, you know, you're going to have to move that when we move, right? And I'm like, yeah, I do. And she's like, okay, just so you know. Like, did you? But there's no, like, what are you doing?
Sure.
You know, but I know if we go down the Scotch path.
It's going to open up some doors you're not comfortable with. Yeah. Like, palette.
Dude. Oh my God.
Like a meaning an artist palette. Yeah. It's such a bigger range of flavors.
And so I just like when someone's like, hey, let's go out for a scotch. I'm like, mm-mm. I just refuse to do it because it's not like I don't want to be closed-minded. I'm afraid of what will happen.
There is a
I know myself.
There's a fantastic ad series, and I'm making it quick, Jack. Sorry. There's a fantastic ad series Lafroig did where they had people try Lafroig for the first time. It's awesome, right?
It was the best. They're like, this is Band-Aids, and this is
old boots.
Awful.
Someone that has made a career and a very successful one on food and palates and flavors. I would. Have you had Lafroig?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was about to say, I'd love to get your honest –
it's going to be that
opinion about something that is so one, I wouldn't say one dimensional, but one direction, and that direction is firewood.
As a cook, like I am a very opinionated person.
Sure.
When it comes to like my likes and dislikes, and you know, mezcal and scotch and that really heavily smoky or peated, I just
avoid.
I'm not really into it. Just like I don't sit back and drink IPAs. To me, it's like lemon flavored cotton balls in your mouth, and I can't get it. It doesn't hit my senses right.
I find that interesting only because you have such a you've done well with barbecuing food mm-hmm. as well, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I do find it interesting that you don't like smoked spirits,
right? Mezcal particularly, I think, is a fantastic. I can't tell you how many times I've sat down with someone who loves peated whiskey. Refuses to try mezcal, and they live near you, and I've said, go over there. Oh, go to Arrow Flame. Yeah,
like the meat aspect of it is like integration of smoke into textural thing, and that's, to me, what I get more off on barbecue things.
You like the whole picture, not just one stroke.
Yeah, smoke doesn't do it for me. It's the – how did the collagen
like
break down into
it? I don't smoke spirits.
Yeah.
I think it adds a really interesting –
when they came out with Rausch beers.
What's a Rausch beer?
The smoked beer?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
Sounds horrible.
Out now.
Why? That's.
I had some new company that's coming out in June, Whiskey in a Can, reach out to me. They want to send me some whiskey in a can, and I'm like, all right. I mean, I'll try it, but I don't know what you want for me.
You know.
I mean, wine in a can has been fantastic. I mean,
if the Slow and Low Rock and Rye and the little 6-ounce, 4-ounce can, if it wasn't so sweet, I would always have that.
Yeah,
at the house.
That's the only problem is it's a sugar bomb.
It's a sugar bomb. Why did y'all make this a sugar bomb?
We burned through an hour pretty quick, and I feel like there's so much more I want to ask you guys about food. So I have to get you guys back on. This time I'll ask. And
if you don't ask, yeah. It doesn't happen.
Thanks so much for coming on, Chris. I appreciate it. We got to go.
Thanks, Chris.
And thanks, man. Thank you, Morgan. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure, buddy. And without
kind of took
ado,
a while to get ramped up.
Yeah. I know. And then all of a sudden, Jack's like, we got to end the show. Thank you, Jack. Cheers, guys.
Thank you, Jack.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.